Calling all lovers of mystery and fans of a good story. If you haven't already heard me talk about June's journey, you're in for a treat. It's time to don your detective hat in this free hidden object mobile game that delves into the captivating journey of June Parker, a self-proclaimed detective on a quest to unravel the mystery surrounding her sister's untimely death. In June's journey, you get to play as June, deciphering clues and unveiling secret plots within thousands of beautifully illustrated scenes. And did I mention it's set in the glitzy 1920s? New chapters are added weekly, so you will never run out of new thrills to uncover, and you can also personalize and decorate your very own Orchid Island where the story takes place. How sharp are your detective skills? Find out when you download June's Journey on your Android or iOS device, or play online via Facebook Games. Your detective journey awaits.
Hello, I'm Alison Larkin, writer, comedian, narrator, and host of the Jane Austen podcast. Join me as we embark on a journey through Austen's timeless stories, starting with Pride and Prejudice. The Jane Austen podcast with Alison Larkin is available wherever you listen to podcasts.
Hello and welcome to the IGN UK podcast number 237. I'm joined by the very delightful Richard Burpark.
Hello.
Luke Kamali.
Hello.
No epithet there. And Alex Simmons.
What am I?
Why does it feel like go a bit easy on Burpark after last week's ritual bullying?
He does the worst impressions in the world.
And, wearing shorts. Wearing shorts. That's a choice.
Didn't think this one through.
We look nice together with our shorts.
Luke is also wearing shorts for audio-only listeners.
Thank you.
Do you fake tan?
No.
I bet you do.
A little bit ethnic. That's kind of racist. But
why is that?
I'm ethnic.
So is everyone. It's all relative, isn't it?
Yeah, it is.
Everyone is ethnic to a degree.
I have mixed heritage.
I have mixed opinions of you.
Do you?
Yes.
Yes. Well, we covered them last week.
Yeah, we did.
They crop up again in the comments this week. So.
Oh, we've come up a cropper. Shall we? Yeah. Roy Cropper. Target audience checked off there. Roy Cropper.
Weatherfield.
Yeah. He runs the cafe in.
No, I wouldn't see that.
Roy's Rolls.
No. Rolls Royce. Haley and Roy.
She's dead.
Formerly.
Isn't she?
How dare you, sir? Spoiler. But. Yeah.
Spoiler, I'm only on the 1960s in Coronation Street. I'm working my way through box sets. It's going to take me 40 years to catch up. So let's crack on with the news.
Peter Moore. Before I read the news story, I've got a fun fact about Peter Moore. If you type in Peter Moore into Google, the first thing that comes up is Peter Moore trombone, which made me laugh.
Is that a new free-to-play title?
I think it's a little sexual position that he likes.
Peter Moore, rusty trombone.
The second one is serial killer. So, but anyway,
he's had a very varied career.
He has.
Combined.
And now he's head of EA, so he's done well for himself.
He's not head of EA anymore.
Is he not?
Andrew Wilson is. He's something. He's CEO.
Oh, he's the COO. Okay, yes.
That's
right,
basically
then.
You've done
Fair
your
enough.
Time.
Yeah.
Easy street now.
Yeah.
I always like seeing that.
Live off that big dungeon keeper money.
Because when you see it written out, it makes him. He's called a coo. Cool.
Like a dove.
Like a dove from above.
By the way, they're not allowed to market that free to play remake of Dungeon Keeper as free to play anymore.
The advert was saying you can't do that because it's quite obviously not free to play.
Because
you spend a little bit for it to be even remotely playable.
Right, fair enough.
So, yeah.
Something to miss.
So, the EA says that he thinks that console wars are good for the games industry because big companies like Sony and Microsoft competing against each other. You know what it's like. It always comes down to the podcast. I can't speak properly.
Chasm.
Outside the podcast, you're a regular Stephen Fry, aren't you?
Regular Stephen. Yes. Anyway, because it drives investment in their platforms.
Okay.
So companies like EA like to see that wealth of competition because it gives them more choice.
This is what you refer. You said this on the podcast last week
when they were talking about a super console, right?
A console-less world.
It's not going to work.
You're saying competition is good for business.
It is.
And innovation.
So I think what's happening is Peter Moore listened to last week's podcast and thought, he's got a point. And then basically came out and said the same thing.
Peter Moore at the IGN party at E3?
He was, yeah.
Yeah.
Didn't speak to him.
Did he trombone? Did he see tromboning anyone?
I was curious.
Well,
he killed someone with a trombone.
He loves his tracks.
You don't want to find out how.
No.
Ooh, wasn't good. Oh, we were cleaning for hours.
What does it mean?
We got charged.
Just smacking them in the face.
We got charged extra.
That's all I've got to add on that.
Is that literally all there is on that one?
Well, there's a bit more, but that's basically. So he was saying that although we managed to get five games out, I think he's talking about Electronic Arts. I'm not actually sure how much of a hand he had in any of those games. It was a pretty stark lineup for both boxes at first, but he says that there's going to be a lot more content by the end of this year, and even more in 2015, which we all know about.
Well, he was singing the praise of the fact that EA have sold the most software of anyone at launch.
Well, I think
presumably because they were the only.
I think five launch titles is pretty good actually for one company.
Yeah.
So,
well done him.
Had nothing at E3 this year, but that's fine.
Low blow. So is that it for that one?
Yep.
Right. Well, we better move on to the other one, then, don't we?
News is dead.
This is your story, Luke, which I don't want to read the title because you haven't given it an appropriate one for air.
Okay. Well, Dragon Age Inquisition. A new party member has been revealed called Dorian. He is a mage and he is gay. So naturally, the comments exploded on IGN.
This is the first time a lot of people learn about homosexuality.
I know. It's this new fad. See if it catches on. Anyway, basically, David Gaider, who has spoken out about homosexual characters in games before, he's described this as the first fully gay male character he's ever had the chance to write. You know, usually it's either bisexual or it's a character who isn't part of the party and so isn't playable. This is the first time there's ever been a fully playable party member who is 100% homosexual and a man, because of course, Jahani was in Star Wars Knights of the Republic back in the day. She was originally bisexual, but that was a coding bug. Fun little fact for you there. And she was always intended to be a lesbian.
So, first thing, does it actually matter? Like, what's going to happen in terms of...
So for him, he said it's a very personal experience writing about... the character.
No, but I'm more about, like, so when you play the character. Sorry, just say you there, Rich. Yeah. See that?
Like, I can't see the trousers now.
But, like, the character, like, what's going to make him gay?
Well, in the same way, the standard thing of BioWare games is that, you know, you can have relationships with certain members of your party.
Right.
So in Mass Effect and in Dragon Age Inquisition, and some of them...
So for the most part, it's not going to impact it whatsoever, you wouldn't have thought.
I don't know. I mean, just, we don't know much about him. There was a Q&A posted on the website that David Gaider wrote about, and it's very much mages are supposed to be, you know, quite secretive and quite upstanding members of society, and they're not meant to involve in any kind of, anything that's viewed like as a kind of deviant... anything that's slightly deviant, and supposedly homosexuality in the world of Dragon Age is still a little bit so his family are like, oh, you're just acting out, why are you doing this? And so it does kind of seem that it could maybe be a bit of an allegory for maybe some of Gaider's, because he said it's a very personal story to him,
right.
A bit of an allegory for the fact that he's had these struggles, but that's pure supposition. I think it's good that it's happening, right?
Like, it would have been more powerful if it wasn't a mage, it was a warrior or something that you would normally associate as a macho thing or something like that.
Yeah, I mean, it's this whole thing. It's this conversation about, yeah, it would have been better if it was that, but by the same token, I think within the characterization of the world, it kind of made slightly more sense for him to do it this way. Maybe it was just something he wanted to do. I mean, the fact that you've actually got a gay character like this in a game, it's a bit... And, you know...
So is this a character that you play as?
No. So basically, right. The way it works is you have a party who kind of follow around...
Because I was going to say, because surely you create your character, and surely you should have the option of any character you create
this is the way it usually works. Like, you know, there's certain characters, and if you play as a female character, then there are some women and some men who you can go for, but some other ones... So, for example, if you choose to play as a female character, you're not going to be able to have a romance with Dorian. That's just going to be off the table. Whereas if you go as a male character... You will be able to have a relationship with Dorian, although if you prefer again and you want to be with a woman, and there might be another man or someone else who's bisexual, because there tends to be
men. I would just fall in love with the person that was just not... none of them would be interested in me. Just be like, all right, fine. Just go from the dragon's leg. Yeah.
How do those relationships actually affect your gameplay?
Well, it's because they're so... you know, BioWare games tend to be very narrative-centric, so in terms of you get more stories, and so there's, like, usually quests that they will only tell you about, you know, once they trust you and they love you in a bit. Yeah, they're just like, you know, oh, yeah, well, actually, this happened in my life, and then you can try and make it better.
Yeah, when you fall in love with someone, they get you going down the shops all the time.
Yeah.
It's like, oh,
I want a crunchy. Can you
leave
go get me a crunchy?
Leave me alone.
Yeah.
So, I'd quite like a crunchy.
I know, I've actually been... Mm. Yeah. So anyway, so that's good.
In short, that's good. If you fall in love with him, it'll send you down the shops to get a crunchy.
Yeah. Pretty much.
So, I really hope that's true. That'd be amazing.
Just a bit Crunchies in Dragon Age confirmed.
Interesting time in the comments on that one, but I'm glad that it's out there.
Good. Last piece of news this week.
Thank you, Peter Moore.
Can you do that throughout the whole thing? Can you do that throughout the whole thing now? So, one last piece of news.
You're singing Umbop.
Ex-James Bond star Pierce Brosnan has... Oh, this is really distracting. That's really, really distracting.
Come on, I'll put it together, Rich.
You'll put it in post.
Pierce Brosnan wants to join the Expendables. He wants to join the Expendables.
Who does?
Pierce Brosnan.
Okay.
Good. Well done him.
Was he James Bond?
He was James Bond.
Oh, right. Okay.
But since then, he's done Mamma Mia, and I can't quite see him being someone who's going to be in the same realm as Arnold Schwarzenegger and Sly Stallone.
But Schwarzenegger's in Expendables after being pregnant. So
that's true.
Very good point.
He was also had a seminal turn in Mrs. Doubtfire.
I've had a seminal turn.
Watching Mrs. Doubtfire all day of the week.
Seminal turn.
I wouldn't class Brosnan as a
hard man,
an action hero.
No, but he was, though.
Not really. Not in the same way that Daniel Craig is, like, properly hard.
Yeah. I wouldn't class him as a singer, but he was in Mamma Mia. So
Pierce Brosnan.
Kind of rhymed. That was beautiful.
I think Pierce Brosnan had the potential to be a really great James Bond. He was sort of sold a bit short with the films he got, apart from GoldenEye. Mm-hmm. The bit in GoldenEye where he's suited up and he's driving a tank, busting through walls and then straightens his tie is an amazing James Bond moment. Yeah.
In
that one moment, he looks absolutely brilliant. Like, that is a very traditional representation of James Bond.
Yeah.
And he's awesome.
I don't know if it's the N64 game, but I very much... I mean, I grew up with him as Bond.
I
know, he's definitely... I think he's good.
I think the later ones...
He wouldn't go toe-to-toe with Stallone or Schwarzenegger, though, would he?
But not necessarily as, like, an action man. Maybe he could be the equivalent of Q.
There are other actors in that franchise that aren't, you know...
Yeah, like Kelsey Grammer's just done his part, isn't he?
It's interesting because the other actors in that franchise have established careers as action stars across a variety of different roles. He is an action star by virtue of being James Bond.
Yeah.
So it's interesting, if he appeared in The Expendables, would it draw upon that persona?
Yeah.
As in the suave English gent who can also handle himself?
Does that work?
And that's like, does that really mesh?
Does it work in The Expendables? Because I've never seen Expendables.
Oh, I've only seen one. Expendables 2.
Right.
I've seen one that is expensive.
I understand. Right?
Yeah. a similar problem with Bruce Willis, I think, because Bruce Willis is an action star really by virtue of his role in the Die Hard movies, not across... Cause with the other actors, there are biggest...
But you did a lot of action movies in the 80s as well.
But not to the extent of the other ones, where they were the draw, like Van Damme.
Yeah.
Like, you couldn't name some of the films, but they are action star, like...
I would say.
What else has Willis done?
Is an action hero.
But if
you were going to put,
He's got a more varied body of work behind him and a more acclaimed body of work than any other of those stars. So
the only way to sell is who's going to win in the fight: Bruce Willis or Pierce Brosnan?
Bruce Willis,
absolutely.
Yeah.
So Schwarzenegger or Bruce Willis?
Schwarzenegger.
Yeah.
Come on,
Schwarzenegger's massive.
He's going to be slow.
Terminator.
But you've got to get in close to get at him, and he would just grab you and kill you.
Schwarzenegger, Stallone.
That's the one, right? That's the big one.
There's the big one.
Schwarzenegger.
I'd go Schwarzenegger. It's
probably happened in
I think Schwarzenegger's the trump card, and even like people bring in the Chuck Norris card. No, it's Schwarzenegger.
Right,
he was the biggest action star in the world.
What about Schwarzenegger and Jason Momoa?
Schwarzenegger.
All right, what about...
Right,
Schwarzenegger or a lion.
Who can beat Schwarzenegger in a fight?
No one.
A crack. Schwarzenegger.
I don't believe that. IGN underscore UK feedback IGN.com.
Schwarzenegger.
I don't know.
You don't but?
I don't know.
Brilliant. Good. Such insight.
I was going to say yes. He's got a lot of rage in him. He's got a lot of rage in him because...
Who?
Schwarzenegger, because he broke up with his wife, didn't he?
Did he?
Didn't he? Didn't he have an affair? He has a love child, remember?
He's got a lot of wandering hands.
No idea.
Okay, so this is just to jog my memory. Because Schwarzenegger is well known for having wandering hands and being a bit of a misogynist.
Is
and,
he?
Yeah, touching women up and all that.
I didn't know.
Yeah, and love child.
There is an absolutely brilliant YouTube clip that you can find, and I'll try and tweet it out. We'll get it out there somewhere. We might not embed it on IGN because it might not be appropriate. That Tilly showed me. And it's a documentary, I think, from the 70s, late 70s, early 80s, when Schwarzenegger first broke it through like Conan and Terminator. Mm. And he's doing like a travel video to Brazil.
Oh, God.
And he's showing you around the beaches of Rio and then some of the nightclub and sort of the nightlife. And he's in, at the end, he's in like this salsa club and there's these women dancing on stage. And they're like, he's had, obviously, he's a bit pissed.
Yeah.
And they drag him up on stage and he just starts grabbing this woman's ass and like picking her up. Like, wow. She's just a little toy.
Right.
It's really embarrassing. And he's just coming onto her on camera. Yeah. Like, he doesn't care that the camera's on him. He does not care because he's not yet Arnold Schwarzenegger.
Yeah. Yeah.
And he just goes for it. And you're like, wow. But Mr. Universe, isn't he? Doing what he wants.
He is.
Ugh.
Yikes.
Arnold's future governor of California. There you go.
I know.
There he is. That's it for this week's news.
News. Right.
Sorry, we didn't have much news.
Well, our fault. No. Well, it's your fault. You're the news editor.
I tried so hard.
Yeah.
I couldn't make anything up this week. Just at a creative low.
Good.
So, the talking point this week. Right. Transformers Age of Extinction, a.k.a. Transformers 4, for short, opened in America and certain other territories last week. And even though early estimates took it below the previous films, it still topped the domestic and international box office last weekend with a grand global debut of approximately $301 million.
Wow,
that's a lot of money.
That's quite good. This makes Transformers Age of Extinction not only the number one movie in the world, yet to open in Europe and certain other places, but it makes it this year's biggest international opening, besting X-Men Days of Future Past. And the biggest ever debut in China for an imported movie. So what we wanted to talk about was a couple of kind of related issues. One, Transformers 4, I can't believe there's a fourth one. Have we got to a point where films and games and so on are absolutely critic-proof?
Yeah.
And secondly, I think a related issue is, where does the blockbuster go from here?
Yeah.
And I think, particularly the Transformers movies, they're slapsing into more and more self-parody. They're getting bigger, more gratuitous, I think is the word I'd use to describe them. Does the blockbuster go from here on? Because the blockbuster arose in the kind of the 70s with Spielberg, where commercial and critical success weren't mutually exclusive.
Yeah.
That you can make a film that appealed to the masses and yet was not dissociated from the values of a good film.
Yeah.
And we can talk around that as well.
Yeah, so it made, what, $300 million. That's a lot of money in its opening weekend, considering it hasn't come out anywhere in Europe yet.
I don't think so, but don't hold me to that.
But if you look at the scores it's got, so on IMDb, the average is 6.4, which is very similar to what we gave it, I think.
Yeah, we gave it around that 6.3.
On Rotten Tomatoes, it's on 17%, so that's a real stinker.
Yeah.
But yet, people have gone to see it in their millions.
So, should we discuss Transformers first and the phenomenon of the Michael Bayification of Hollywood?
I do wonder. Now, like, you've been cutting some videos, Rich, of the cast, and a number of the cast describing as a genius, which I laughed off instantly.
Yeah.
But I wonder if it's just, you know what, it's just not made for us.
But also at the same time, I think the studio behind it might describe him as a genius if he can make those margins.
I think the cast genuinely believe that he is a genius. I don't think that they're putting on any kind of facade. Yeah, I think he is great to work with. He's super high energy. He does a lot of kind of like on camera stuff rather than a lot of CG stuff. So that's got to be an experience for the actor, especially in a world where a lot of stuff is CG nowadays and they're just against a green screen.
Yeah.
To actually be acting, I suppose, gives them a better experience. Yeah. In turn, gives the press rounds a higher caliber better appreciation for Bay, all that kind of thing. So I think they genuinely believe what they're saying in these junkets. But I think you're right. I don't think the films are made for us. I think they're made for kind of the teenage audience. And if I was a 12-year-old boy, I would love to see that film.
Because I think
diehard Transformers fan there.
Because it's not as if it's a surprise that this film wasn't going to be that good. Because the last three haven't been that good. The first one was okay. Second one was terrible. Third one, didn't see it.
Had some bits in that are better than
stuff
in the second one.
But he's not known for making...
But like, he has made some good movies. Like The Rock is a good movie. Yeah. It's just, I think he's got to a position of power where there's no one telling him that you can't do that, Michael. Because he's made so much money for these studios.
Yeah.
What I noticed about Transformers 4, it has got the most product placement of any movement I've ever seen.
Really?
Like, every scene will have something, whether it's a car, a drink, a Chinese soft drink, a hotel chain, a watch brand, a beer brand. So they're obviously, the budget is massively subsidized by these sponsorships, which is obviously increasing profit margin as well. But he's, I almost think he's got into a position where nobody's telling him that, Michael, that's a bad decision.
Yeah.
That's not good for the movie. Less is more. Maybe make it an hour and a half. Yeah. All these sort of things.
Shouldn't that, so he's always worse. His producer who does that, right?
Yeah, but maybe he's got into a position of power where there's nobody telling him that.
Well, somebody attacked him with a fan, didn't they? So that was someone trying to tell him.
A fan should have attacked him.
A fan attacked him with a fan.
But so if he's made 300,000 on, sorry, what was it? 300 million on the film, just on box office takings, plus all of the money that they would have made from product inclusion.
Yeah.
But he's kind of become known for his product placement as well, hasn't he? Kind of over the years. And it's very obvious when you see it. And maybe that's another kind of self-referential point that they're trying to make, like self-aware films. You know,
I don't think it is. I don't think it is self-aware, though.
Like, do you not think? But no, it's so obvious.
It's so obvious, but it's not. There's nothing for me that would indicate that there's an awareness that that's happening beyond the, oh, is that the check clearing? There's not a reference, a smart reference to the brand itself that you could do in a way that kind of is a joke. But also, I think we'll get onto some other stuff. But the thing is, it's getting bigger all of the time. It's each one's trying to top itself. So the last film, they destroyed all of Chicago. This time, right, the Transformers are huge. What do we do now? Literally, let's introduce some Transformers that are bigger than the other Transformers.
Yeah.
And there's this theory that one of the reasons people like blockbusters, or the old blockbusters, was like humans taking on forces that were much bigger than themselves, like a David and Goliath sort of situation. Like one of the first lines that Leia says to Luke is, you're a little short for a stormtrooper.
Yeah.
And it's about taking on stuff like Brody taking on the shark. It's kind of man against monster.
Yeah.
These movies, it's the humans, you're never really worried about them.
Yeah.
They're kind of just dwarfed by these big things punching each other, and you become really divorced and you're not really invested, and there's nothing like of a semblance of a good film in there.
Yeah.
It's just noise, and it's incredibly long. And the thing about Transformers in particular, it's quite a horrible film in some ways, especially its treatment of like certain female characters. Yeah. And also the other characters aren't treated any more respectfully. Mm. But there's a character in there. Obviously, there's that famous shot, I think, in Transformers 2 where Megan Fox is bending over a bike.
Yeah.
And I'm not playing like the whole kind of White Knight thing here, but there's a character in Transformers 4 that is set up as a teenage girl, and yet Michael Bay has no problem putting the camera literally between her legs. There's a shot that...
Pointing through her legs.
From behind, imagine what he's going to do in the next film to top himself.
I don't think
maybe he's going to top himself.
Anyway, but whole Transformers 4 is like...
So where does it go next then? And then, you know, will it be more of the same? Because you know what? It's worked.
It's
just going to be bigger, isn't it? That's the running theme for all of them. It's just bigger.
Four and a half hours long.
Yeah. I think the other thing that you were saying is that obviously they've sold a lot on the Dinobots, but they're
so you might want to explore them a bit more. But okay, so... Let's rewind for a second. I'm going to read some blockbusters out for you from yesteryear. Okay. Check this. Jaws, Star Wars, Close Encounters of the Third Kind,
so what's
Alien, E.T.,
by...
Raiders, Terminator.
Mm. So I guess the first thing is, what is the definition of a blockbuster?
I think profitability.
Is it the amount of money it makes?
Yes, I think that has to be, because that's the definition we still use for films now.
Because
I think, mega money.
But when Star Wars was made, that probably wasn't made with it, you know, this is going to be a blockbuster.
No.
It just turned into it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I think it
has to... But that doesn't happen these days, really. Or like horror films, they make a ton of money.
Yeah, I think another defining characteristic of a blockbuster is it probably has to have a decent budget already.
Yeah.
So there's a certain pressure on it to make
it's
it big.
It's got to be a spectacle.
Yeah. So there's a pressure already on it before it comes out. Like, how much is this going to make?
Yeah.
Like, that just shows that blockbusters can be fantastic movies. So those are some of the best movies that came out from that period, the 70s, the 80s, 90s, Jurassic Park.
Yeah. Which takes us on to Dawn of the Rise of the Planet of the Apes. Is that right?
It's a terrible title.
Is it Dawn of the Rise of the Planet of the Apes?
No, it's Dawn of the Planet of the Apes.
Dawn of the Rise
See,
of
I
the Evening.
I keep calling it Rise of the Planet of the Apes because I feel like Rise should have come, like Dawn should come before Rise.
Mm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Because you have a dawn and then something rises up.
Yeah.
Yeah. So which one is it?
It's Dawn of the Planet of the Apes.
So they had, so basically it went Rise of the Planet of the Apes, now it's Dawn of the Planet of the Apes. But that actually got a very good review from us.
It's well, you've seen it.
Yeah, it's amazing. It's properly brilliant. So it's, I think it's like a modern blockbuster masterpiece.
Right.
I think because, like, in complete distinction to Transformers, which we saw last week, I saw it like a couple of days later, it has focus. It has a character, a set of characters. It has a story.
Yeah.
It has outrageous special effects. Yeah, like, special effects are every bit as impressive as the ones in Transformers. Mm. There's, like, maybe two explosions in it.
Right.
Which are, again, plot necessary. Yeah. Like, the explosion actually means something.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, it's wonderful.
But I do think that is part of the problem with Transformers. We've seen a lot of it before.
Yeah.
It's like, I often think that special effects are far more powerful when they happen in the background. Or you're not thinking, oh, that's a good special effect. It just, it's part of the story, or it's part of, it just feels natural to the story.
Like, with Transformers, the special effects are incredible.
Yeah.
Like the lighting, the rendering, everything on all parts of it look incredible, and you don't think that you're really watching CG when you're watching it, and you do kind of buy into it, but it doesn't aid the story, which is the issue. And I think so probably with Dawn of the Planet of the Apes, you're looking at that, and again, you're probably not thinking this, this
again,
incredible
it's
CG.
It's what we talked about the other day. It's like it's you've got story, set pieces existing independent of your story.
Yeah.
Where in Dawn, it's all they sat down and wrote a story.
Yeah.
Mm.
And occasionally there are sequences that are action-like. Like, you know, when they go to, when they fight each other, I'm not giving anything away there. It's in the trailers.
Yeah.
And that's just a natural set piece. Mm. And by the end of it, you get characters from point A to point B, because that's what you wanted in the story. And along the way, you had a kick-ass action sequence. Yeah. Whereas in these other films, you've got, right, we've got these five awesome action sequences already blocked out and storyboarded. Yeah. How do we fill in the gaps? And that's a terrible way of working.
Yeah. So do you think that we'll see more films like Dawn? That, you know, really, hopefully add a bit more or bring back something back to the blockbuster.
Yeah,
and because Godzilla, I haven't seen it myself, but a lot of people saying that was a great film.
I love
film.
Godzilla.
It's got a lot of Edge of Tomorrow, again, a lot of people saying
that. Some of the Marvel, like Avengers, I think, really good. Mm. Nolan with Batman as well. Yeah. They are out, though, but obviously, ultimately, what it comes down to, making that kind of movie, it's like anything. It's hard to make something that's good.
Yeah.
And it's probably easier to make something that can tick a lot of boxes and that you can market well and also offset maybe potential danger with stuff like product placement and tie-ins and all that sort of stuff. Yeah. Like, you couldn't do that with Dawn of the Planet of the Apes because you'd ruin the presentation of the film.
That's going to be the thing, right?
Yeah.
Like drinking Coke.
Yeah, I mean, a Subway.
When it comes out, it'll be interesting to see what it does on its opening weekend.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure it won't be as big as Transformers.
No, so I think, so we're talking about can films be critic-proof? Like, of course that's the case. You know, like Pirates of the Caribbean before Transformers.
Yeah.
A lot of those sequels got absolutely slammed, made no difference whatsoever. Yeah. But on the opposite, I think films can benefit from really good critical buzz that if they're maybe on like a teetering point. So Dawn, I think, will benefit from word of mouth. Like with reviews that are so good, if like people start coming out saying masterpiece, etc., that will get people in a way that saying Transformers is crap won't deter people.
Yeah.
Well, I've got an example of that tied into our British comedy thing from last week. Was that so Mrs. Brown Boys, which we discussed last week, that opened to 4.3 million.
Not quite 300 million, but still.
No, but it just in the UK.
For a British film that probably cost nothing to make.
Exactly. Cost next
Alan Partridge opened last year, Alpha Papa, opened last year to 2.2 million. So
Alpha Papa.
Pretty much half.
Yeah, it just shows
and,
you like.
And again, reviews for Alpha Papa were overwhelmingly positive.
Yeah, and I think sometimes it's easy to lose.
But there were no reviews for Mrs. Brown Boys because they didn't.
But that's the thing. But you know, but even though.
But I don't think it would have stopped anything.
No, yeah. but that's the point. Like, there's. I mean, I suppose there's a bigger. I don't know. Marketing spend is probably the same. I saw Alan Partridge on buses. I see.
There's probably honestly like it's easy to lose perspective because all the people that probably listen to this podcast be more in Talon Partridge than Mrs. Brown Boys. Mm. But one of you, there's probably five people who are not on the internet, not commenting, not tweeting, who are massively into Mrs. Brown's Boys.
I don't think people who want to watch Mrs. Brown's Boys can search for a review of it.
And similarly, but I mean, that's kind of, I guess, part of the point of Transformers, right? Some people don't want their, you know, really good stories and stuff. Some people just want to go and have three hours of exposure.
I suppose the only thing our audience might take against it, and I don't really mind because it's become such a separated thing, is like someone who grew up watching Transformers, it's like, I really wish somebody else had done this. I would like to see realised with those, with that technology, like some of the storylines I watched as a kid. With the same amount of heart and sincerity, rather than the kind of leery, predatory sexual gaze that I mean, and all that sort of nonsense stuff,
you know, robots. What when you actually take a moment to look at the world, like just look at the world around us, how much noise there is, how much everything goes on, you know what, he's making sure he rises above the din. Like, you know, he's dialing up, like when you look at all the kind of sexual advertisements we get, he's dialing it up there. When in terms of all the noise and the conflicts we see in the world, he's making it bigger and louder. Like, you know, he is making it stand out. And I'm not saying that that makes it a good story, but he's damn well making sure
you get it. I think the marketing for this Bond's been quite good. Like, it makes it feel like a little bit like a soft reboot. I think Mark Wahlberg is actually... I quite like Mark Wahlberg. He's a lot more personable. I'd rather watch a film with him in than Shia LaBeouf.
Absolutely.
But watching the film is just kind of a deadening experience. Like, just being constantly shouting.
You won't see that on the poster.
It's Michael Bay. Michael Bay violently ejaculating into your face for 2.5 hours.
Yeah. But then, I mean, I thought that about Man of Steel to a degree. I love the opening sequence. Yeah. I love the... I thought, you know, as an origin story and, like, the character building was great. But the action sequences were just too much, too big. And by the time it got to the end, I was like, I've seen this. Oh. I've seen this fight. This is just a longer fight.
Just imagine how long Dawn of Justice is going to be.
I know, right?
Yeah.
But that's going to be a bum number.
But that's the kind of, you know, that's something, it's not just unique to Michael Bay. It's just a sense of, like, dial it back. And, like, when you look at something, like, it's much smaller scale and everything, lower budget, but, like, you know, the Red Wedding or something, or just something that's more visceral.
Well, Nolan operated on a huge budget as well, though, but it's how you use that money.
Yeah, exactly. And, like, you know, more visceral, personal, build the characters and do something awful to them. Don't just kind of, like, destroy a city type thing, you know? It's, I don't know.
Yeah.
That makes it sound like I'm angling for the death of loads of people that
upset
me, but you know.
Pretty much are.
We should open up to our listeners, you know, what do they want to see more of? Do they want to see more of the detach your brain kind of blockbusters like Transformers? Or would you rather see stuff like, more Nolan, more...
Or is there happy balance?
Yeah. Mm.
Or is it healthy balance?
Both can probably coexist.
Wonderful stuff now.
IGN
up next.
_UK feedback at IGN.com.
Or Facebook and Twitter at IGN UK. We'll never check it, but do it.
Yeah.
Right in, honestly. Right, next up is Reader F. Here.
Oh, I'm starting, aren't I?
Don't lift the curtain, Luke.
So, Martin Rackham says, podcast 235 started skipping after about 30 minutes. Yep. What's all that about? That's about Rich being awful at his job. If Luke, Chris and Dan had a fight, who would win? Luke. I'd include Alex, but he sounds more masculine than the others, and I would therefore would assume he would smash them to bits.
Interesting.
Come on, soft lads. I could take Chris.
Do you think?
I think I could take Chris.
That's a really good question. I can't work it out.
I go to the gym and I have no qualms about fighting incredibly dirty.
How much do you bench?
Yeah, but
I'm not telling you.
What, in chaps?
You don't strike me as a fighter.
No.
No, but I'd fight quite dirty. I'd be the one looking for weapons and stuff. No, I wouldn't
You'd be getting somebody else to do your fighting for you.
No, you know what? There's a story that I can tell. I'm not putting this story in the public domain.
Hang on.
No, I'm not putting this story in the public
domain.
Someone
did fight for you.
No, I fought for myself. I did not come out of it well because it was pretty dirty fighting tactics. But I won. Yay!
Did you smash their head in?
I gouged their eyes out and their heads exploded like a melon.
Curb them. Yeah. Is that weird?
Is
that an expression used?
Yes.
Was that just Portsmouth?
No, curbing is an expression.
Oh, yeah.
Tilly gets angry after a drink. So.
He does.
Oh, I won't fight him while he's been on the fighting juice.
but does it affect his coordination, though?
Probably would. Well, he falling down.
All I'm going to say is Barcelona. That's all you need to know there.
Yeah. Okay, so in answer to your question, we'd probably all run away.
Yeah. Alex is too masculine.
I don't think it'll be a fight to remember.
No.
What about you, Ben?
Are we really placing? Are you happy with praising you?
I'm
above,
the hardest man on IGN,
above the din,
which is ridiculous.
Okay. I'm not on the list, but I'll kick all your asses. That's what I do.
Said with such conviction.
Said in an American accent.
Right. Good luck
don't
with that.
Don't get me onto accents.
Brilliant. Oh, go on, read this next one.
Wouldn't it be funny if Chris Eubank was in the lift with Frank Bruner? That's what you always do when you're coming in. Oh, wouldn't it be funny if Frank Spencer made a cup of coffee in the IGN office?
Give us your best accent reading this one.
No way.
I hate that when impressionists are on like chat shows setting up their own voices.
Yeah.
Didn't
wouldn't it be funny
question?
If I was sat on the sofa and just did my own bloody voice?
Anyway, next piece of feedback.
If Christopher Walken wrote into the IGN UK.
do Walken.
No, I'm not going to do Walken.
Your Walken's pretty good.
Thanks.
Come on.
But I'm under pressure.
Was that it?
Those boots are made for Walken.
How does he speak?
But he didn't fit into them.
You know how Christopher Walken speaks. It's a very strange speech pattern.
Go on.
Yeah, I know, but I wouldn't know how to.
Duh!
No.
What's that?
I don't know.
That's Stallone. Stroke Stallone.
We need to stop doing the accents.
Go on, Rich.
I'll read the feedback.
Boring.
Maybe you can persuade me for the next episode. So,
no,
we got Ben Harris has written in about his favourite British comedy, what we was talking about last week, and his favourite one is Blackadder. He says
Slackbladder.
What?
Captain Slackbladder.
Set Blatter.
Amazing.
He enjoys the witty dialogue, of course, and
that's always good for a comedy.
Yes, it's a glimpse of what life was like in the trenches, and he says that the episode...
That was the fourth one, wasn't it?
Yeah, fourth season.
There was meant to be a fifth one, wasn't there, set on a ship?
What's that, didn't there?
Apparently, there was a treatment done for it, but they were just like, let's leave it.
What, Second World War?
Yeah. So it would have been like in the Navy.
You like Blackadder.
I do. I remember last week I said that I actually quite liked the first series, despite it being inverted.
we miss out loads of stuff, but I was sure we were going to get onto that. But also, one show worth mentioning is Bottom. I've been watching Bottom a lot again on Netflix. I used to love that show as a kid, even though massively age inappropriate.
Yeah.
It's a really dirty show, but Rick Mayall's performance, he is amazing.
I used to love watching the young ones.
He's an amazing performer. Rest in peace.
So, Ben Harris loves Blackadder, and even the last episode, I'm sure you remember it, in the trenches when they actually go out to war.
Poppies.
Brings a tear to his eye to this day.
Oh.
Well, it's regarded as one of the great British TV moments, comedy or otherwise, just one of the great moments.
And obviously, we say it all the time, but the story about how when it was shot and they were all like, oh, this looks awful, this is bad, and they all left really despondent. And then when it came out and they just sort of fade.
It's one of those things
in, like posting
in
edit.
Fix it in the edit.
Yeah. Mm. Whereas Bear Park tends to make things worse in the edit. So there's that.
Lifting the curtain yet again. So.
You can roll it in glitter.
You can roll it in glitter, yeah.
Anyway, so Paul from Australia.
Good idea.
Not going to try it.
Australia's
one that we can all do.
No, I'm not going to offend our listeners.
No, I did the Summer Height Tie impression a couple episodes ago.
G'day. I'm going to do that. I was listening to the podcast last week and heard you talk about the Desert Bus and something else. The Desert Bus game. You remember the Desert Bus game we talked about?
Where you drive
across the Nevada desert in real time. Yeah. There is a flash version of the game online that my mates and I have completed on a Saturday afternoon in little old Perth, Australia. Here are a few other facts about the game that he thought were interesting. When you complete the journey, you're awarded 1 point. So an 8-hour journey will award you just 1 point. As boring as all this sounds, my mates and I made a little bit more fun by having some afternoon drinks while playing. You shouldn't drink and drive. This is scary because if you crash, then a tow truck will bring you back to the start, also in real time.
That's painful.
Can be very scary when a drunk takes the wheel 7 hours in.
Oh my god. That's a proper gaming marathon.
Our score of one awarded us the fourth highest score in the world at that time, which to us... And the Ladies of Perth was pretty amazing. Was it? The Ladies of Perth.
I like this, man.
The one Lady of Perth. And the first time you pass someone's score on the leaderboard, the Final Fantasy Victory music plays non-stop until the end of your journey. This can get annoying after a few hours. Yeah. We're attempting to break our record during the next 24-hour gaming...
Final Fantasy Victory music?
Apparently.
Oh, that's amazing.
We're attempting to break our record during the next 24-hour gaming marathon for charity. We held the event for a British organisation called Special Effect.
Mm. Yes.
Which helps children with disabilities play video games. We hope to do this annually. We played 18 consoles in 24 hours. Wow, that's brilliant work, Paul. I might do a seamless plug right now. So, we know Special Effect, we know them very well, and in 2 weeks' time, a bunch of people from the IGN office, including me and Rich, are running 10K for Special Effect. And if you want, you can donate anything you like from pound upwards.
Money, obviously.
Money, yeah, not socks. www.justgiving.com/IGN. And it'd be very much appreciated.
Yeah, really, even if it's just a quid or something.
Even a quid.
You're not doing it this year?
Nope.
Oh, okay.
Are you?
Hates kids.
I've got Oscar Schlatter's in my knees if I run on hard surfaces.
You've got Oscar what?
I've got Oscar Schlatter's in my knees if I run on hard surfaces.
You've Oscar your Pistorius.
Have you amputated?
That's a terrible condition.
Ooh.
Andrew Goodban writes in saying, just wondering, when GTA 5 comes out on PS4, will there be a deal where you trade in your PS3 copy to get the game at a discount when you buy the PS4 version?
Not an official deal.
Might do it, I guess.
Mm. They did do when it launched, didn't they?
Yeah, but that's because it was right at the beginning. And I think the thing is now, probably a lot of people have traded in their copy of
There's lots of games
already
doing that now.
Right. So, there's going to be no trading value as well for the previous console.
So I think if you do get a discount, it ain't going to be a lot.
Your online save carries over, doesn't it? But you're not your single player.
If anything, trade it in now then.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Probably get more for it now than doing it at the time.
He lists another best moment on the podcast was in podcast 154 when Stu and myself were talking about FIFA 13. And the live stream at 1 minute 50 to 2 minutes 30. That's very specific. Thank you very much. We do Mancunian voices, which were hilarious. Keep up the good work.
Do one now.
It's your generic mank accent. Your guitar.
It's not actually. Well, it's more. It's based off of Kasabian, and I saw them at Ali Pally, and he wanted to be Liam Gallagher really badly. I might pop into it later if you pop into your Christopher Walken.
Okay.
Honestly,
I raise your Christopher Walken with my Mancunian accent. That wasn't it.
Spoilers. Scott Norton says, hi guys, loving the show and the banter. So this is more shows that he's like when he was younger. He used to watch all the old classic British comedies with his dad. So Fawlty Towers, which I think you mentioned last week. Dad's Army. What do people think about it? I never really got Dad's Army.
Not big into Dad's Army. Saturday tea time.
Yeah.
Obviously, there's some very famous moments like Don't Tell Them Your Name, Pike.
Yeah.
It's very Mr. Mannering.
Yeah.
And so on.
Porridge. I never liked porridge. I preferred Ronnie with the other Ronnie.
Waiting for that.
You ready, Beck?
Oh, I see what you did there. That's really funny.
Smoother oat.
I preferred the two Ronnies as a duo rather than separated.
Four candles.
Don't.
That's a brilliant.
That's classic.
I
piss pronunciate all my worms. That's classic, that. That's
good. Two Ronnies are good.
Blackadder, then, we've already mentioned. But he says the best one is Only Fools and Horses. Mm. I don't like Only Fools and Horses,
really?
but Roger Pack passed away recently, so I won't speak ill of the dead.
Who is he?
He's Trigger.
Oh, he's
Trig.
Right. When we went for drinks, my first IGN Christmas drinks, which would have been 2012, and we went to that bar on Archer Street, he walked in, and he was there, and he looked around, and he was like, oh, he was clearly
trying to lean on
it.
Over.
Sadly not, but no, he was there, and I was like, it's Roger Pack, and he went.
I suppose we mainly focused last week on kind of alternative comedy.
We did, yes.
Even though I shouldn't use the word alternative comedy because that's associated with like Alexi Sayle and Ben Elton and all that lot. But like kind of modern, offbeat comedy,
dark comedy.
Only Fools and Horses is an absolute classic.
Yeah.
Although we talked about this after that email came in, and I feel like its reputation, for me anyway, has suffered. Or I'd liked it less since they came back after the three Christmas specials, which were like in 1996 or something, where they became millionaires. And then they brought it back like multiple times. Just if they'd gone out on that high, which is still amongst the most viewed shows in British TV history.
And it was also, was it Comic Relief they did or Sport Relief or something?
They've done loads of one-offs
now. They did one last year, didn't they?
Yeah, they lost the money. It's like, well, I wanted them to become a millionaire and just end it on that.
Yeah, exactly.
Because it ended so perfectly. It was like a brilliant last episode when they're walking off to the sunset and Dullboy says, this time next year we'll be billionaires.
Yeah.
And the last question he has is,
walk away.
There was an attachment to this which I didn't print out, but there's basically a playing card of Batman and the Joker, and he was saying, would any of you a tattoo of something to do with either games, films or comics? He said he's considering getting
Am I right in saying we're a very untattooed bunch?
Yeah. I don't have any.
Yeah,
I don't
have any. We're all tattoo free. I imagine Tilly is. He's too hairy.
Keza had the Legend of Zelda thing. Keza had the Triforce.
Are you sure that Tilly hasn't just got like this hairy chest tattooed? It's just one big tattoo.
I quite wanted a tattoo when I was younger, like just a star either on my wrist
on your
or
nipple.
Peck, actually. But no, because
Peck. Gregory Peck.
As
Asuka Finch from Kill the Mockingbird.
Just because I was like, but then I thought no, because I might have gone into being an actor. And do you know, it costs films with Angelina Jolie and Brad Pitt.
Oh, Tom Hardy.
It costs them so much money to digitally remove all of their tattoos in every film.
Tom Hardy's Bane. I think they just have to sit there with like, one of those rollers that you paint someone with and just do that every day. Because in close-up pictures of Bane, you can kind of see its makeup on his arms.
Right,
yeah.
Compared to our American brethren,
we're
very lightly tattooed. Yeah. They've got loads of tats.
And they're also quite big on their piercings as well, whereas we're all whole free.
Yeah.
I'd say if you even have to ask about getting a tattoo, you probably don't want it that much.
Yeah, if you're on the fence, don't get it. But if you were to have one,
I wouldn't sit on the fence while having a tattoo, because it might go a little bit funny.
Depends holding you still. What would you have if you had to have one?
Game or film related type thing?
Yeah.
I just wouldn't.
A little Triforce?
Nope. I cannot think of a tattoo that I would have that would be cool. Ever.
Neither guy. This is my deepest shame. When I was younger, Final Fantasy X, the main character's called Tidus or Tidus, and he's got like a necklace which is quite a cool symbol on it. I might get that, maybe.
You could have like Tidus across your chest or something like that.
Great.
I think words are always scary.
Yeah, words like, are scary because they might get them wrong.
Eric was thinking that Eric or IGN's like social and community manager.
Yeah, in the States.
He told him this idea. He's got quite a few tattoos already. He's got like some Dead Space ones. Mm. He's thinking of getting one on his spine, which obviously would be super painful, of the kind of rig, the life support rig that Isaac Clarke has in Dead Space. And what he wants to get it done with is this unapproved ink. It's not yet been tested. That glows in the dark. So in the dark, it would glow, light up like the actual rig in Dead Space.
And then give him cancer in 5 years.
Yeah, well. If cancer was the only thing Isaac Clarke had to contend with, he'd be very happy.
Yes.
Eric's not Isaac Clarke.
He thinks he is.
Okay.
Right. I have.
Yeah, sorry, going back to tattoos very briefly. You always see that the ones where like dads try to kind of have pictures of their kids.
Oh,
they look like zombies.
Disfigured faces. So you just think, you know, you're putting something on your body that's being drawn by somebody who probably hasn't even got an A level in art.
Yeah.
Why are you doing that?
But also, as you grow older, your kid ages.
Yeah.
Nice size.
So you get to look at them upon.
I prefer photos.
Yeah. Much better.
Yeah.
Much better. Much better.
Yeah.
George Morton says, after listening to your discussion last week on British comedies, I was left astounded by the fact that none of you mentioned the pinnacle of such a genre, Alan Partridge.
Yeah. Chris would have caught that in a second, wouldn't he?
Yeah. I would even go as far to say it surpasses The Office in terms of comical genius. Who can forget moments like, smell my cheese, you mother. I was going to do it. I thought about it. Or, in a South African accent. No, Alan, you can't.
No, Alan, you can't. You can't, Alan.
Or Jurassic Park.
I want to go. Yeah. I want to go talk to him.
And then there's one more. There's one more, which is all in. My foot's gone on a spike.
He's completely right. Alan Partridge is brilliant.
It is brilliant.
I suppose last week wasn't exhaustive, and we didn't really plan that much.
Yeah, this is our fault.
Yeah, it does exceed. I think you know, without Alan Partridge, there would be no Office.
Mm. Yeah,
you know, the seeds for David Brent, even though it is a different character, lie within Alan Partridge, but the. What I think is brilliant about Alan Partridge is the way that they adapt Alan Partridge. So he kind of gets reborn like some comedy phoenix. Like originally a reporter on the day to day, then as a fake chat show, then him like living in a travel tavern, to him doing Mid Morning Matters, to him presenting a documentary. Like every time it's something different.
Yeah.
That's really smart.
It is really smart. Yeah. So I've been watching Know Me, Known You Again because it's just. It's so funny.
So for my sins, I never really watched it when I was younger. It always just seemed a bit, I think I didn't really get it. But then when I watched Alpha Papa on a plane, and it was so funny that I've gone back
brilliant.
And started watching again. I'm howling, embarrassing myself.
I didn't think Alpha Papa was all that.
I just found it hysterical. I had moments that were funny.
I think I'm Alan Partridge, the first series, where he's in the travel tavern, is probably the best Alan Partridge stuff. Yeah. It's just that comedy of pathetic banality that British people absolutely exceeded. Like him just like, my favourite episode is the one where he's just at a loose end. Mm. He has nothing to do all day and he's just like, he walks to B&Q and buys some tungsten tip screws and he's just nothing. He's just got nothing to do and it's just hilarious. And then the other thing is the Mid-Morning Matters, because when I first heard about that, like Foster's were sponsoring it, really cynical. But have you watched them?
No.
Genuinely, because it's so restricted. It's him in a room presenting his radio show.
Right.
And he gets guests in. And because there's just a focus on the writing and you're limited by what you can do because it's just on radio.
Yeah.
It's hilarious. Yeah. Like the phone-ins he gets are really funny.
Yeah.
And yeah. So I'd start there if you've never watched Alan Partridge.
There's a good fact as well from this piece of feedback. Remember Michael, the Geordie?
Yeah.
Yeah. He is the voice for the Compare the Meerkat ads.
Wow, it's a good fact.
Yeah.
He's very posh in real life.
Is he?
Michael, yeah. Chris met him
a while back. Who did, I remember that, yeah.
And just as a PS on the subject of Alex bullying Luke, it's a classic situation of bants. Alex is just having bants about it all. Classic British bants.
Bants.
And you know what? We've got healthcare, so therapy's fine.
And I do hate him.
Yeah.
It's really warm in here. I feel like I'm going to pass out. It's not just me.
I'm basically not moving to try and conserve my energy.
I was getting ill.
You all see it's really hot. Yeah, dude, the shorts really seem like a good idea now, don't they? Right?
Anyway, if I pass out...
I'm so cool over here.
I know, I just...
If I pass out...
Don't ever say open leg breath again.
Open leg breath, I'm sorry.
Okay, so Aaron says, Duck Hunt. Gentlemen, Duck Hunt.
Good.
Thanks to the PlayStation 4 and especially the fantastic remote play feature, which means that finally I get some game time while the missus is hogging the TV. Women.
Assassin's Creed.
I have jumped for the first time since PS1 back into PlayStation ecosystem.
I think
he means ecosystem.
Okay.
Doesn't matter. It's probably a predictive spell. And one thing that I can't find any information on is integration with Steam. I know for Portal 2 days, that some of my friends cross-play with me from their PS3. Right. But what happened to the service since then? I noticed on Steam that you can still link your PSN account. But is anything still in the pipeline with Steam OS coming to rival Steam boxes? Is the service now dead? I don't know whether the cross-play thing across PS3, and imagine that's something that they're not supporting anymore.
I wouldn't have thought so.
Would we ever see Steam or some kind of adapted Steam for PS4?
I don't think so.
I think it's very unlikely.
Those are independently like systems, aren't they?
Yeah.
Yeah. And at the minute, they're rivals.
And if you put it on there and they do a Steam sale, then why would you ever buy something on the PSN?
Because the PS4, with everything that's going far, is kind of positioning itself as that kind of living room box, and that's what the Steam box is.
Yeah.
If it ever actually comes out.
Yeah. Another question is the Vita thing I was made to buy. Do you guys know of any accessory to make the touchpad on the back of the Vita a tactile button? So he's probably talking about remote play, because sometimes when you play remote play,
it turns it into
R2, L2, and it's not the most comfortable. I don't know of anything in particular, and I'd be worried, but I imagine there are loads of accessory manufacturers, so I would be surprised if somebody hasn't come up with something.
The question
like that
is it actually any good?
Yeah.
I'm very cynical about that kind
add-ons.
Of stuff. Yeah.
Sorry, Aaron would be absolutely useless on that one.
Cameron.
Your fingers were doing some very weird things there when you were. Yeah.
Always do. Always the fingers.
Cameron Amoyles, I think that's how you pronounce his name. There is a podcast memory. I've been listening to the podcast for about a year and a half now, writing in response to your request a couple of weeks ago for memorable or amusing moments. The podcast recorded in the aftermath of the Xbox One reveal event, podcast number 187, Give the Dog an X Spoon, which was released on the 24th of May.
Seems really weird happening here, Alex, with like accent.
Yes. It's hilarious throughout. Your apparent boredom of the reveal event, and who can blame you, leads to some hilarious tangential conversations that I shall not spoil, so as not to deprive the enjoyment of yourselves and other listeners from hearing them again. I'll give you one relatively cryptic clue. You had a lot of fun with Don Matrix's name.
I don't remember
this. I don't remember that either.
I feel... Did you... Don Mattress?
Did we coin... We didn't coin that. That's out there.
I don't know, but that's something we've said behind the scenes quite a lot.
Right, we have to go back.
He's with Zynga now. So
In the words...
Episode number 187, Give the Dog an X-Bone.
I'm on it.
In the words of Jack from Lost, we have to go back.
Yeah.
Are you actually already cutting these out, by the way?
Nah, I'll do it last minute, won't
I? No, but I actually really appreciate people giving me numbers and times.
Well, here you go then. This one's really good for you. One final point. I'd also like to put out an open request to listeners to find a particular podcast that was somewhere between number 150 and 200. So if you can just, it's only a year's worth of podcasts. You can
have a look.
He remembers both myself and Luke doing a few hilarious attempts at accents. I don't know if I've got this reputation to do accents. I don't really do them.
I don't know if you're aware that you do them, but you slip into them every now and then.
I used to do my street accent. I haven't done that for a while.
No.
But nobody's written in street, that's why.
But people have asked for unlucky quite a few times. No? Okay. Amar Jammu says, hi guys, Duck Hunt, long time listener, first time writer. So, best British comedy again. His famous British
comedy. You didn't order these very well, did you?
Oh, were we meant to keep them together?
Well, that's kind of the idea.
I'll just print them off chronologically.
That's why it's called collating the feedback, not just printing out a lot of old stuff.
I said I was printing, I didn't say I was collating, so really, that's not my fault.
Disappointing Kamali.
My favourite British comedy of all time is Red Dwarf. Didn't watch it when he was younger, so he, not the recent ones, he's saying, did anyone like the old ones?
Cause they I haven't even seen the new series, but the old series is great.
Yeah, I think it was like seasons 1, 2, 5 or 6, can't remember, were good.
Yeah,
but it started to get ropey.
4, 5, and 6 are like the ones where they went off in. I really like the ones where they go off in Starbuck and they kind of have weekly adventures. Yeah. 7's when I'm going to reveal that I know a lot about Red Dwarf now. Episode 1 of season 7 is called Tika to Ride. And it's one where they started shooting on nicer cameras. Do you remember? And it got really kind of glossy.
Right.
And I almost feel from that point it was kind of doomed because part of its charm was it being a bit crappy.
It was a bit crappy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Sets.
Which was, what was the kind of back to reality?
Back to reality, I think, season 4 or 5.
Yeah.
With the ink, the Disperse Squid.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
That's a brilliant episode.
So I used to have
that and Horsemen of the Apocalypse.
Yeah.
Those are the considered two best episodes.
Yeah. I had
fact.
3 Red Dwarf t-shirts in my time.
Wow. Did you?
Yeah.
Wow.
Read all the books.
Grant Neil.
Novels.
Yeah. I can't remember.
Anyway, love the podcast. Keep up the Kamali bashing. He loves
there
it.
There you go.
What, that's something else. Oh, you really flinched then.
Alex Woodwin.
It's on camera. I don't care. I can just like walk away.
Let's go back. Can we go back? Blow that up and slow motion that face. Like, that's a gif right there.
Like my head wasn't in the way.
Okay.
Joseph Kramer writes in.
Disappointing Kamali. What is that?
Bashing.
What's your name?
I don't even know if I should be reading this piece of feedback out. I could just skip it altogether, but in the interest of fairness, I will read it out. Thanks for reading out my feedback about The Simpsons in the last episode. You asked for any critiques of Rich's performance, and I suggested a forfeit. It wasn't actually for that, was it?
No, it wasn't. That was if there was a mistake. Although I would say that your accents on the impressions on the last podcast were a mistake.
I don't know what you're on about.
Well, they were offensive.
I think they were great.
I think we should pull out your leg hairs one by one using tweezers.
He's only got 2. He's still pre-pubic.
You can't really see it. I'm too pale. So he says, whilst not too major, he did manage... What happened there?
He was a little bit footsie.
Oh, sorry. It was very close. Close proximity here.
We'll sort out the table then.
Get our table back.
I've been trying.
Do this in the US, do they? You don't have a table. Like, yeah. So what I'm doing here. I'm supposed to be leading him into battle and I'm doing my own stapling. Office.
Whilst not too major, he did manage to ruin one of the best Simpsons quotes. Not just with an awful impression, but by changing the word hatless in Chief Wiggum's famous quote.
So do you want to try it again?
No.
Properly this time.
As Christopher Walken.
If Christopher Walken was to read this quote, you want me to do it?
Ultimate tease. Are you going to have to do it or not?
Performance anxiety.
Oh, no.
It's very common amongst men your age.
in the famous quote, suspect is hatless, repeat, hatless. That was a bit more silly.
I don't think this segment of the podcast works really if you're not doing impressions, because it's literally
suspect
just reading.
Suspect is hatless, repeat, hatless.
Who's that? Who on earth you speak to? He doesn't speak like that.
That's after a week of practice.
That's Chief Wiggum. I haven't practiced. If I practiced, I'll get this.
This goes to be like a Vindaloo, this section.
Do Walken.
I need something to say in Walken.
He's giving you something. Read emails.
You need to hook. Like, you know, Alice McGowan's always like, you've got to have a hook, like the phrase they always say.
What if Christopher Walken is ordering something from McDonald's? Oh, right. Moving on.
Anyway,
Anyway, you ruined that, and what else?
Anyway, I asked for the forfeit to be involving chocolate, so he suggests that I wear a hat with an unwrapped bar of dairy milk beneath it all day. I'm fine with that.
Well, it's very you're not allowed to eat it.
You'd have it on your head, and so it would melt, and like every now and then it would hit against your nose, and you'd be a brown nose, but like you are, your little brown nose.
It would eventually drip down.
Yeah, but it would look like someone had curled one off on your head. But maybe that is the other alternative. Maybe we can each take
you look like Viserys Targaryen, but just been dunked in a dairy milk.
Yeah. Anyway, yeah. Sorry for ruining your favourite quote.
Look like that.
Good work.
Great. This is from Fat Pete. Fat with a PH.
That's a bit rude.
I don't know. I can't tell from his Gmail. His Gmail is...
really bold letters.
This is like Fat
Pete. PH. Means he's cool.
That was, you know, it's like, I'm going to just bring it up, and I probably shouldn't do, but when that person emailed in for potential work, and their email address was Mr. Jizz. It's like, come on.
Can I have a job working at IGN?
Do not email me.
But I got the job in the end anyway, so it's fine.
I must point out, that wasn't his real name. He wasn't Derek Jizz or something like that. It was like...
What would be the best first name if your last name was Jizz? There's got to be a joke.
I was going to say Ivor, but it doesn't really work.
Ivor Jizz.
Well, it's like Ivor Biggin.
Yeah. Ivana.
Hugh. Hugh Jizz.
Hugh Jizz.
So it's like Hugh Jazz. This thing in The Simpsons, like the one that rings up Mer. I'm a big stupid moron, and I look like a moron, and I smell. Anyway, moving on.
That's my favourite one of those was Amanda. Amanda hug and kiss.
I need
Amanda hug and kiss.
Why can't I find Amanda hug and kiss?
I think we've all gone delirious. It's like playing in Manaus.
It's so funny.
I'm hallucinating. I might bite one of you.
Better your own piss.
Right, Fat Pete says again, not very well ordered here. Only Phil's noise has never got a mention. It is a true classic. This is truly the greatest comedy.
Read these?
Yeah, and I was like, but then I went out for lunch and I got distracted. Oh,
honestly, we need a Dyson fan. If anyone works for Dyson, then can send us a fan.
But like within the next 3 minutes, I
didn't. Won't be too late.
Coming live to you from Brazil. Some of the moments. Right, you list some of the.
I just didn't realise that you had another top on as well.
Yeah, I know. I took that off. It just melted off. Anyway, so there's some of the funniest scenes ever witnessed on British TV. You know, it's Del falling through the bar, through the wine bar, and the blow up sex dolls. His favourite moment was when Del Boy and Ronnie go to the publican's ball dressed as Batman and Robin. Remember that moment?
I do.
Famous.
So basically, why didn't we mention it? John Sullivan's achievements are rattling up 25 million viewership on Christmas Day. Shouldn't go unnoticed. And he's very right.
Yeah.
But we've already talked about that.
Right. David Trevino. Y'all were talking about how the way you talk makes people think you're being rude, so I thought I would share something. We have a contractor We have a contractor at work who is British, and a lot of people complain how rude he is. I have a lot of people talk to me and ask me about it, and the response is, well, he's British. I figure it's his accent. When people hear him talk, he sounds curt and a little rude, but I just think it's just his accent. I have no problem. He's a nice guy. What's his name? Is he nice?
I guess there's a... Like, don't get us wrong, there are
British
people in England
can
that
be awful. Like, yeah, there are rude British people.
I'm very mindful that we can't swear anymore.
Yeah, I know.
Or it requires a bit of beeping from you.
I was going to say a very naughty word then, but...
But when we were in the US, I used the C-bomb. I dropped the C-bomb.
Yeah.
Just in conversation. And I was very acutely aware that it's much more serious sin in America.
It really doesn't go down very well.
No, swearing in general
he
doesn't.
You covered it quite well. I was just happily observing.
But what was the context?
I can't really, go into the context
right,
right
now.
Here. I'll tell you elsewhere.
But it's
just like, in front of Australians, they'd love, they wouldn't even register with Australian.
They love that.
They'd probably take that as a come on.
It's what they call their parents, like as Tim and Van Deeren.
I wonder if anybody's called their child that.
Be a bit mean, wouldn't it?
I don't think you probably can't get it through.
But if your surname's registration Hunt and you call it like Celia Hunt, and then it's C Hunt, it would be Chunt.
We might as well say it now.
Yeah. Chunt.
You can't do that.
Can we not go?
It's quite
chunt?
Funny on Twitter if you look up people who have registered those handles.
Yeah.
So there's a person who is at. I thought Stuart should have got that.
Yeah.
He'd love that. I'm sure he would love that.
Yeah.
Imagine that complaining to that corporate account. having to like reply to you.
Just going off topic for a minute, because we never do that. Do you know, to get a verified account on Twitter, it's not about how many followers you get or anything. It's not even that. It's to do with advertising spend. How much advertising spend do you spend a month? If you spend a lot of advertising money, Twitter will be likely to will consider verifying you. It's very difficult to get verified unless
how do you spend advertising money on Twitter?
Like through a corporate entity.
Really? That's not always the case, though.
There are other ways.
There are other ways, but apparently, in terms of for a lot of people, have agents who then agree to take out, promote tweets and stuff.
Anyway,
says unverified Luke Kamali.
There you go.
Can we hurry up and finish the podcast, because I'm going to die in a
second. So Will Smith has emailed in.
Will Smith.
It's a different one.
I thought that was the end of the feedback.
No,
we've got 15. Still got to do out this pissing week.
So,
I'm going to pass out this week, all of us.
My favourite would have to be another comedy one. You know what? Anyone else who wants to print off the feedback is more than welcome to print off the feedback.
One job.
His favourite would be Ideal. Does anyone know what Ideal is?
Yes.
No.
Right, well, apparently, did it? Do you?
Yeah.
Is it funny?
Johnny Vegas.
Oh, it's absurd and bizarre and has great characters like Jenny, Steve / Craig, Cartoon Head, and Psycho Paul.
Why have you started booming into the microphone?
Yeah, that's going to be horrible.
It's because it's really
calm
warm.
Calm it down a bit.
However, I think it hung in there a bit too long, and the last few series were of a lesser quality. I think it should have ended at 5.
There you go. Yeah. Tell you what, let's save these other pieces for next week.
Yeah.
Okie dokie.
Thank you very much for your feedback, as always.
The last one was really good, but whatever.
Next week, we will make sure that Luke does it properly and orders them.
Is it now?
Yes, it is your job. And if you don't do it properly, you have a forfeit, which are users, audience, listeners, everybody. Whoever gets the chance to pick what it is.
Okay.
Right. If you want to get in touch, IGN_UKfeedback@IGN.com.
Not willing at all.
Indeedy.
So,
out this week.
For a change. That's right.
I just want to go have our milkshakes.
I'd love a milkshake.
We're going to take a
Brings
look
all
at
the boys to the yard.
We're going to take a look at all of the games and movies out this week. But rather than us reading through the summaries of whether games and movies are any good, we're going to get the IGN robot to do it, aren't we, Daniel?
The IGN robot is here.
Very expensive.
First up this week is Child of Light.
It is indeed, but I want a second. Just give me a second.
Okay.
So, Phil.
Okay, so...
Who's Phil?
Where did we acquire this IGN robot?
We bought it off some Jawas just on the outback.
If you're watching the video, you know the truth.
Yeah. So Luke Skywalker got...
I am the IGN robot, bitches.
I am the IGN.
Oh, I'm going to have to beep that out.
Is his name, is his name Bitches?
I thought it said Pictures.
Yeah, I am the IGN robot, Pictures.
So,
right, what do you want first?
IGN robot, please tell us what you think of Child of Light on Vita. Computing.
Computing. Right, okay.
Robot.
Right. Quiet. IGN Robot needs to speak.
With its gorgeous art, exemplary combat, and handcrafted aesthetic, no RPG fan should miss Child of Light.
There you go.
There you go. What score did it get?
Oh, I don't know the score. 9 something. the robot doesn't recognise numbers. That's important for the subsequent reviews that we're going to be doing as well.
Confuses binary.
In 6 million different languages, but not numbers.
No. Numbers don't matter, Alex.
Also out this week, Guacamelee, Super Turbo Championship Edition.
Guacamelee flexes its muscles, improves the strength and everlasting effect of the Metroidvania formula.
What is Metroidvania? Like, can someone explain to me? Is that, like, it's obviously Metroid Prime and Castlevania, but
it's Metroid meets Castlevania. Yeah. And it is a type of...
You can't just make up words. That's not a thing that should be allowed.
That's how all words were
made. That's not how it... we found them in a big book.
We found them in the stone tablet of words.
The tabernacle.
Classic bands.
Thank you for that, IGN Robot.
Okay.
One last review.
Do you want to hear from the female... IGN Robot?
Why not? She's a bit hard to understand.
What, Kathy? Kathy's lovely. She just got promoted from HR.
Shovel Knight, in all of its old school glory, is arguably the best game released so far in 2014.
You're damn right, Kathy.
Kathy is very ethereal, isn't she? She's all like floaty and it's like, ooh.
She's ethereal.
She's the one from Wuthering Heights.
She's
always out on the moor.
She's out on the moor just blowing around.
Double night. So who's gonna be reading through our Transformers 4 review?
Heathcliff, It's me.
Oh, Gabby, I've come home
honestly
tonight.
I'm typing as fast as I can here. All right, what's up next?
Transformers 4. And surely we need like a robot to read out that review.
Yes.
Bruce?
It sounds like a
Our
robot.
Bruce is a bit hard on this.
Whoa.
Michael Bay returns to unleash global destruction in his robot smashing extravaganza Transformers. Age of Extinction.
Age of Extinction.
Yeah. And we don't have a... also out this week is Anomaly by Noel Clark, but we don't yet have a review for that, I'm afraid.
But we do have a review for the other film out, which is Tammy. I thought it was about Tammy Wynette. I don't think
No,
it
it's...
Who's Tammy Wynette?
It's She's got Melissa McCarthy singer. In it. Right, Tammy who's reading this? Singer. You know who's reading this? Tell you what.
Stephen Hawking.
No, it's Victoria, the intern. Intern robot.
Tammy is a mess, but not without its charms, thanks to Melissa McCarthy.
Hey!
I didn't understand well. A word.
Tammy is a mess, but not without its charms, thanks to Melissa McCarthy.
Tammy is a mess, but not without its charms, thanks to Melissa McCarthy.
I read it before we
thanks,
came in.
Melissa
I don't think Victoria's going to pass her probation, to be fair.
That's right.
All right. Do you want to hear that from Kathy? Kathy's got a nice voice. Wait then.
Tammy is a mess, but not without its charms, thanks to Melissa McCarthy.
The only problem I have with Kathy, it just feels like she's staring at me. I think, as soon as she finishes the sentence,
but
she's going to stick that robotic hand in my chest and pull out my heart.
I didn't know where you're going then. Victoria sounds like she's phoning it in there.
Yeah, like yeah. Peter Dinklage.
Yeah.
So, IGN Robot, if you're going to recommend one game out this week, which one would you recommend?
How long have we been in this room?
Shovel Knight.
Yeah, if you go into game and ask for that, I'd like to see what you get back.
Yeah, yeah.
No, I'd take the podcast and play it to them.
I'd like to know the shovel night.
Shovel night.
Sounds like it, doesn't it?
And what about which movie would you go for?
Da-da.
Stay at home.
Yeah, very good.
I haven't heard of that one. Who directed that?
Speak as well. This is what happens if Cooper's throat gets ripped out.
Your mum.
There you go. Thank you very much, IGN Robot. Well, whether you will be back next week depends on our listener feedback as to whether they liked you or not.
And also whether or not we can get fluids into us quite quickly.
D-A-A-N-N-T-Z.
Ah, that's supposed to be Bantz. Just spell it.
B-A-N-T-Z-Z-Z.
Sounded like a virus.
Yeah. Oh, maybe that's... Maybe.
Can we
maybe
go die somewhere in a corner with a glass of water?
It's really warm.
Sounds like a good idea.
Anyway, thank you for this week's podcast, everyone.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you to our listeners for listening. As always, you can get in touch IGN underscore UK feedback, IGN.com. Don't forget if... what was the thing? What was the thing? If, oh, no, it's if you make a mistake. If
Luke, I don't order them, succinctly group them. So can you all please...
look at the little pissy
so if you could, like, email...
Just talk amongst yourselves so and work out who's going to send feedback.
In order.
So
you all talk about
to order
say
them.
And, like, agree to send it in chronologically in order, grouping it, because that makes it very easy for me. Thank
so
you.
If you get it wrong, we are going to do something really quite horrible.
But you want them to nominate?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah. You know what? You want to... I will stick with the chocolate theme, some form of chocolate.
Do something within reason, because then we might actually make him do it.
Yeah.
Something on camera, maybe.
You will be getting an email in purple font, my friend, if anything untoward happens.
So that's it. Let's all make an idiot of Luke Marley. And until next week, bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye.
Hey there, it's Rachel Ballinger, and I am extremely excited to invite you to Rachel Uncensored. It's my podcast where I sit down and get real with my friends and celebrity guests, where we talk about all sorts of topics. And sometimes we might be under the influence when we do so. We cover things from personal stories to hot button issues. And it's the only place on the internet you can find an uncensored version of me. It's a side of me that you might not have seen before because it's not the most family or brand friendly. But don't worry, I'm still sort of slightly a decent human being. If you're intrigued, then make sure you check it out. New episodes drop every Wednesday. You can find it on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts. Trust me, you won't want to miss out on the fun and candid conversations we have here on Rachel Uncensored.